From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in September when the true story of a local nurse takes the stage. In a play called Collared Green Curves, audiences will learn the story of Teresa Bowick. Now, you may know Teresa from her work with the bicycling organization Conky Cruisers, which helps people stay active and get healthy. But maybe you haven't heard her full story. Bowick says she was a victim of bullying and later domestic violence. She has found purpose for that pain, and now she's using it to raise awareness of intimate partner violence, help victims, and push for prevention. She's even partnering with some colleagues across the country in Hollywood to bring attention to this issue on a national level. We're going to hear Teresa Bowick's story this hour. We'll talk to her about her upcoming play, which will be at Jiva Theater Center's Fielding Stage as part of the Rochester Fringe Festival. And we've got a full menu of guests to welcome, including Teresa Bowick. It's nice to see you back here, and thank you for being willing to share your story. It's great to have you.
It's always a pleasure, Evan, to come on Connections. Love seeing you and Megan. And I think we need to start to have the conversation around intimate partner violence, because we've been dealing with it in silos for too long. So my goal was to put it on a stage, put it out there, and let's just talk about it, perhaps in an arena, on a stage, in a place that's easier to have the conversation.
Well, I admit there's parts of your story that even just hearing about this performance that I was not aware of. So we'll be working through that, especially in our first half hour. We're going to kind of dive into that. But let me also welcome our other guests in studio and on the phone. In studio with us is Delbra Brown, who is an advocate for intimate partner violence prevention. And Delbra has put together a lot of the connections that made a lot of these people in our studio come together. So, Delbra, it's great to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is Pamela Graham. Pam is education and training coordinator for the Willow Domestic Violence Center. Always nice to see you.
Thank you. It's an honor for Willow to be here with this bunch today.
Very good. And Aceon Owens is an actor who is, among other things, going to be a part of Collared Green Curves. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Hello.
Well, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And I want to welcome on the phone as well Julian Bertano, who is executive producer and writer behind a show called Exposé. Julian, first of all, welcome to you. How are you?
Thank you very much. I appreciate you. How's everybody doing today?
Very good.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Very good. Well, so Julian, why don't you stay there for a second, because there's a lot of threads to pull together first. So let me go ahead and do that. And I'm going to start with Teresa Bowick and just start with your own story. When did you decide you wanted to see this on a stage?
Shortly after the book was published in 2013, and I said I need to take it beyond the book. So there is a book, my memoir. Go buy it, folks. And got to do the shameless plug, Evan. And so I said, you know, there's got to be a better way to tell this story. Because as an educator, all nurses are educators. I like to find creative ways to teach. So you'll see me wearing a collard green dress. Great way to teach people to eat green leafy vegetables,
you
right?
You mean a dress made of actual collard greens? I've seen the picture.
There it is.
That's real collard greens. Okay.
So in being an educator, being a nurse, I'm looking for opportunities for community health. And so what I look at our stage play as edutainment. So when you come there, not only will you be entertained and have a great theatrical performance, but you'll walk away with some knowledge. And so early on in planning to do the performance, I had reached out to the Mental Health Association of Rochester, to Willow, and said, you know, it's going to be key that we partner on this, because I don't want to put anybody in a clinical compromise when they see the things that happen. I've had people in rehearsal see the beatdown, is what we call it, and really want to call the police on the actor because it's so real. So you never want to put somebody in a situation where they can be compromised. So having Willow present for the studio performances, having a mental health association present, allow people resources right at hand should they be in a situation where they need to reach out.
Okay. And again, it's called Collared Green Curves, The Nurse Bowick Story. You can see it at Jiva Theater's Fielding Stage, September 14th through the 16th, as part of the Rochester Fringe Festival, rochesterfringe.com. I want to go back through your story a bit here, because there's parts of this I frankly did not know. And so I need to get your memoir, first of all. And you can get on my case for that, too. That's fine.
Oh. Evan. Now, you know what? Evan is the reason why I really, really have these fabulous book signings, because I went to his book signing and it was the best. I said, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to be like Evan.
All right. We're not. This is getting awkward quickly.
Okay.
But let me pull back, go through your childhood here. So you tell your story in your memoir. We're going to see it on the stage, but it starts with you. Tana, take me through your story here.
So my story is growing up in a typical home where a lot of the food was fried. My mom was from South Carolina. My grandmother was the cook, and so she lived in the house. So everything was fried and smothered in gravy. So now when I talk about growing up, I say, you would have came to my house for dinner, don't come looking for your daily allowance of nutrients, because there wasn't going to be no vitamin A, no B, no C, no D. There were no antioxidants in sight. But what all the food was missing in nutritional value, my family overcompensated for in love. And so food was a way to just show family love. And God forbid you didn't eat everything on your plate. It was almost disrespectful.
So did you, kind of put on weight growing up? What was your...
Oh, Evan, everybody put on weight in the house. Everybody was overweight, hypertension, diabetes. Even the cat was overweight. Because that Joker didn't want no nine lives. He wanted fried pork chops. So that was the household, which led to a lot of the chronic illnesses. Like we know now, American Heart Association reports that we lose a woman every 8 seconds to heart disease. That's my family. Mm. My mother was that person that we lost to heart disease. And so I wanted to use my life and like the purpose to the pain in a way that could educate, that could help somebody if perhaps they see my life story, see that I was one able to stand back up from the beat down at the nursing school and continue my education, that I could eat unhealthy for all these years and turn it around and do very positive things, even make it to the cover of Weight Watchers, a billboard in Times Square, right here from Rochester, that perhaps this story will just give somebody hope for another day.
Now, when you talk about, as you describe it, the beat down at nursing school, it's a story I did not know about, but why don't you tell me a little bit about what happened here?
So at that time in my life, I was in an abusive relationship with a person who loved Budweiser often, all day, every day. So, these things set you up for unhealthy situations, and he did not want me to be a nurse. And so,
why didn't he want you to be a nurse?
Because the thing about when you're in these relationships, intimate partner violence has a lot to do with control. Mm. And inferior and superior. And so he had to keep me in a dependent, inferior position. Me becoming a nurse put me in a situation where my earning potential was going to change, my status was going to change. And so he didn't feel like at that point he would be the man of the household. So he had to shut that down. And shutting that down was coming to the nursing school and beating me down in front of everybody. Because one, who going back into an environment that they got beat down in? So the thought was, if I do this here, she'll never go back. Mm. And so that day I left school in an ambulance, and I remember being at Genesee Hospital, and I finally said, somebody got to give me a mirror. And it was horrible, looking at my face and thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do next?
Can I just ask you, had there been any physical abuse before that time?
A lot of cursing out, a lot of screaming and yelling, but that was the first incident where it was just like, whoa.
And he did it in public.
In public.
For other people to see. When he showed up, were you scared? What was that moment?
I was just, it was a nervous moment because I knew there was tension in the relationship. I knew it was bad at that point. So I was kind of like, okay, what's going to happen next? And then the beating happened so fast until nobody could respond. Because a lot of people will always say, well, why didn't anybody help you? And I'm like, nobody anticipated what was going to happen.
People were probably shocked.
And everybody was just shocked.
Yeah. So let me ask Asian, by the way, who is the actor who plays the abusive boyfriend. Is
yes,
that correct?
Yes, he does.
Mm-hmm.
So Lord.
Asian, for you, this moment is depicted on stage.
Yeah.
Is it difficult to be that person in this moment on stage?
It is extremely difficult. I have to say, when you were talking about the beatdown and people being afraid, getting ready to call the cops, I laughed at that because I remember that moment. And I'm like, oh, I got sort of nervous. Just the fact, I grew up around that. And
you did?
I grew up around that vaguely. And it was something that as a boy you see growing up, it's not something easy to deal with because it makes you sort of have this conflicted personality, because you have certain influences say you need to lay down the law. And you have other influences say, that's not the way you're supposed to do it. So being raised to be a man by a woman, I learned the opposite. You know, that's not right, regardless of what. You don't put your hands on a woman. And so for me having to play that role.
It's so out of your nature, isn't it?
Oh, it hasn't been easy. I mean, we all have that switch where we can turn, but I personally don't like that role. But I'm thankful for the role. I just don't like doing that role.
I take the point, but you also know that the value in portraying it on stage is not to be sort of salacious, but to be... I mean, there's a point to the story.
I mean, yes, I mean, you want to send a message. You definitely want to send a message.
And so you've got to inhabit that role as truly as you can. Do you remember the first time kind of walking through it that you had to kind of let it out a little and you know?
Yeah, the very first day we met up to practice. And thankfully, ironically, the person who's playing, Teresa, also played my grandmother in another play. So it was kind of weird. We had to get past that whole.
Oh, you beat up your grandma. Oh, my God.
Nah, grandma used to beat me up. So just that in general, having, you know, getting past that. But we were able to just say, okay, you're comfortable. I'm comfortable. Let's work on this. How we are going to go about this. And every once in a while, we'll talk. And I say, well, what if I try this? And she'd be like, nope, nope. Because I'm a big guy. He's like, you ain't about to be throwing me around. I don't think so. So, you know, we just work with each other.
And now that you're seeing it come together and you're getting ready for these performances of Collard Green Curves coming up September 14th to 16th as part of the Fringe Festival, are you any more comfortable with it now? I mean, comfortable may be the wrong word, but do you understand what's required? Do you feel like you're better?
I understand what's required. Yeah. And just in general, I'm more confident in the character. And I know I've been doing this for a while, so I know how to distinguish my character versus me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to allow it to incorporate into my life and do none of that. It's not going to happen. I already know once it's done, it's done.
It's on stage.
I'm gonna waste my time.
Yeah, Pamela Graham from the Willow Domestic Violence Center. You're hearing Teresa Bowick describe domestic partner violence and control, and I think you've brought that up before. How much does that ring true to everything that?
Oh, everything. Yeah, and I'm just Willow's honored to be here with these precious hearts today because these things are mighty because art imitates life, right? So it's very big. I mean, abusers are beautiful, gorgeous people. They gain the power and control, right? They gain the power and control with threats. They maintain it by the follow through stuff. The threats can be gentle or they could be major. So it's I'm really aware of the place that there was nothing physical prior to the beatdown at the nursing school because as soon as people start to grow above and beyond and abusers start to lose that power and control, it ups the ante on the danger level. So I'm not surprised that you didn't feel that coming because, you know, abusers weave in the love and the goodness along with the tension and the abuse. So you never really know when it is going to come up. So it's amazing that you're so brave and strong. This is really an example of thriving beyond the surviving, and that's amazing.
Well, Teresa, for you that day, you said you had to kind of eventually look at yourself in a mirror, and tell me about again what you saw and what you felt. I mean, how badly hurt were you?
Both my eyes were black and swollen. My face was badly beaten, and I'm like, okay, what am I going to do next? And it really didn't take me long to come up with a plan. So I figured that I was going to need some Gucci sunglasses, and I had about $5, so I went and got an off-pair brand of Gucci sunglasses, and I went back to class, and I took my seat, which was in the front of the class.
You didn't quit.
And I graduated number one in the class that year.
Did you even think for a second about quitting?
I thought of not so much about quitting school, but how was I going to go back in this situation and just own it? And so that's what Gucci did for me, even off-brand Gucci. So I knew that I had to go back in this space strong and own it. And that's what I did.
You had a right to that education. Yes. You had a right to be safe there. Also.
And so you end up graduating number one in the class. But can I ask then, what became of that relationship? I mean, were you able to kind of cut off that relationship? Did you decide you wanted to press charges? What did you end up doing?
Oh, I went back.
Yeah.
I went back. Mm-hmm. I went back after the beatdown. And you'll have to come see the play and read the book to see what happened next after that. So the first night of the play is already sold out. So if you folks are listening, I'm thinking you need to go to fringefestival.com, get them tickets. Let's go head on and sell out Friday
tickets,
and Saturday night.
Get the tickets.
You know, but, and I think that happens often that, you know, no matter how bad or ugly the situation is, we will go back. And I was judged very harshly for that, for going back.
You mean by people around
you? Oh, yeah, absolutely. How could you be the smartest girl in the class and go back to that?
I want to ask our other guests in this room about that as well. And I'll start with you, Pamela, to kind of follow up. I want to hear Delbert's thoughts as well. Teresa is saying she heard that judgment from people around her.
Oh, yeah.
And does that make it even harder for people who've been victimized?
Oh, yeah. See, survivors do not need judgment. They need support and they need options. So really and truly, it's not unusual for survivors to return up to 7 times. It just depends on resources, support, and really the danger level of the abuser in it. Okay? So we got to just remember that people do not break up from these relationships. They escape on a daily basis. They're not only managing their own safety, they're managing safety of children, safety of coworkers, classmates, neighbors, etc. So also, abusers are so great at weaving in the love and the goodness along with the tension and the abuse that if we were all abused 24/7, nobody would be there. So in going back, why would you not have in that moment? It might have been the safest thing for you in order for you to start to safety plan how it's going to look for you moving forward. So as a society, we need to stop asking why people stay, why people go back. They go back because they're absolutely managing something that is inconceivable to the rest of the world who does not understand this.
Yeah, I think that's so well put. I want to ask Delbert Brown again, a local advocate for intimate partner violence prevention. Why don't we just back up and tell me how you became an advocate, Delbra?
It's amazing. Watching ACON perform that, you know, Teresa, when it was doing this casting call, so we had an opportunity to see snippets of her play, Julian and I. And watching him perform, and she said, the beat down, she said, get ready. You know, I'm like, okay. He played that character.
Oh, thank
and
you.
And even me, I've growing up in a domestic violence home. My home was domestic violence. I am a relationship life coach. So when I do workshops, before I thought about this new brand called Cake Chronicles, Relationships According to Cake, it was inspired by my grandmother. If I can't be the cake, I won't be the crumb. And I took her metaphor as a mantra of encouragement to help people to understand in this place. You're right. Going back was something you're comfortable with because your support system has the same mentality. It's about changing the mindset of the support system. It's about prevention. So watching that, I retreated back to being 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 13, and 11. And I was just, it took me back. And I was like, oh my gosh, I forget him. I was in my own place as a child. So Cake Chronicles, basically, as a community advocate, I've always had a passion for helping and being involved in organizations. But when I wanted to honor my grandmother, I took her sayings and I wove them and crafted this metaphor. And my vision is to create a movement of change. Create a movement of change about the mindset, not just about escaping, but healing and helping the entire family so that when households change, our communities will and neighborhoods will change. The issue that she faced was, you're correct, he saw that you were now no longer going to need him. He is wounded in his own right. He needs help himself. That's another reason Mr. Bertano will speak to that, his initiative of Save Our Women. He's also collaborating with another initiative, men supporting, you know, this domestic violence, men against domestic violence. Mm-hmm. That is the mantra. Men, there are men out here who care about this, but how do we change? So I too wrote a book, shameless plug.
Nothing shameless on this show.
Awesome. So my book is also on Amazon, just like Teresa's, and I support her and I thank her for her collaboration with me. And my book is called If I Can't Be the Cake, I Won't Be the Crumb. And it is a self-help workbook. Because what happened for me last year, I worked with up to 50 women identified, said they want to change, but they didn't want to pay. So in our culture, in our community, we will support and we will dress ourselves up. We will look good, but we don't know how to change our heart. We don't know how to change our mind. So in my analogy of understanding, you won't pay the small amount to change, but you won't seek help either. What are we to do? So I decided to take those coaching lessons that I was giving my clients, and I created the book. So Kate Chronicles, this book is about healing and helping people overcome and understand why these relationships are difficult.
Let me just remind our listeners the central theme of this program this hour. And in our second half hour, you're going to hear a lot from Julian Brentano, the executive producer and writer behind Exposé. We'll be talking about what that is and also this idea, the Save Our Women initiative as well. So you just heard Delbra Brown, an advocate for intimate partner violence prevention. You've been hearing Pamela Graham, education and training coordinator for the Willow Domestic Violence Center. Acyon Owens is an actor. You can see him in the upcoming show, Collared Green Curves, The Nurse Bowick Story. Teresa Bowick is the Bowick in that title. And she is, well, the founder of Conky Cruisers, a nurse, an activist, a nurse who graduated number one in her class.
Number one in class.
Go you.
She's going to let you know that a couple more times, probably. And the play is Collared Green Curves, The Nurse Bowick Story. And it is all about these issues, intimate partner violence, right there at the core of it. So tickets are $15 at rochesterfringe.com. September 14th show, I guess, is sold out.
Sold out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 15th and 16th, you still got a chance to get tickets to that. It's the Jiva Theater's fielding stage coming up there. So let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll continue the conversation and bring in Julian Brentano next, right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue at Nazareth College is taking on a huge issue. It's the question of women and gender studies in religion, in world religions. They're tackling questions about patriarchy, about subordination of women in religious texts, about whether that subordination matches what people like Jesus of Nazareth actually lived. We'll explore that next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. In our short break, I was just talking to Acyon Owens, the actor who plays Teresa Bowick's partner, intimate partner, the one behind the intimate partner violence in Collared Green Curves. And Acyon was bringing up a point that I think needs to be explored as well. And that is the idea that when we talk about intimate partner violence, it is more often than not women who are victims, but certainly not exclusively. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to kind of talk about the male perspective on that. So
yeah, I just wanted to say that domestic violence has both sides. There are men who are victims of domestic violence. There are women who are victims of domestic violence. Hurt people hurt people. So you have some women who've been hurt by men, and they will bring that into a new relationship. I don't know if you know the term, you don't bring your new baggage to a new place. You empty out your baggage, you know? There are many people who have been hurt who bring issues into new relationships and in thus causing that person to be hurt, and the cycle repeats. So I just wanted to say that it's not just all women. There are men as well, and, you know, somewhere we have to break the chain.
Debra, you want to weigh in on that?
Absolutely. I really appreciate what you said about understanding the baggage.
Yes.
Because domestic violence at its core is complex because there's emotional issues, psychological, behavioral. There are habits, lifelong habits that have been formed where your mind is conditioned. And just like trying to break the habit of smoking, this is a habit that has to take time to change the mindset. Thus the reason why people will go back seven times. Mm-hmm. We have to understand what is at the core, and that's what my book was to do, inspired that knowledge and teaching. But Mr. Brentano in himself with his Men Against Domestic Violence, as well as his Save Our Women, and that was the reason why I collaborated with him to bring him to Rochester, and thus the reason we are all here together.
By the way, as we get ready to say hello again to Julian Brentano, here are some statistics from the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. On average, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. And during 1 year, that turns out to be more than 10 million women and men. So what's the difference in terms of women and men? Well, roughly 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men have been victims of some form of physical violence by an intimate partner within their lifetime. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men have been victims of severe physical violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime. 1 in 7 women and 1 in 18 men have been stalked by an intimate partner during their lifetime. So, yes, women more than men, but to Asian's point, it is not exclusively women. And I know that's a point, Pam, you've made on this program before.
Oh, yeah, and that we're just ready for it either way. So if we have a female friend who comes to us to say their male intimate partner is doing this, we don't go to the place on saying, why are you allowing this to happen? Why are you going on with it? Because are they going to share that with us? If we have a male friend who comes to us and says a female intimate partner is doing this and we laugh, we will cause harm. If we have a friend in a same-sex relationship who cannot trust us to tell us the good, they are not going to be in a place that they can tell us the bad.
Absolutely.
So we need, again, to keep the judgment out of it and meet folks right where they're at, because each individual dangerous relationship has its own danger level based on the lethality level of the abuser in it. It's not consistent.
I'd like to add real quick, sorry about that, Yusian, that at the event that I hosted a week ago, it was shared that New York State is number one in domestic violence occurrences this year. And I just found that amazing. And we are in New York State. So that's just prevalent and huge.
All right. So let me bring in Julian Brentano. He's on the line with us. He is the executive producer and writer of Exposé. And Julian, first of all, I know you've been having a chance to listen to the conversation so far, but why don't I ask you to kind of tell us what Exposé is and tell us a little bit more about how you got in touch with Delbra. Go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, Delbra and I, we met over a year ago, and she realized different things that I was into. I guess she identified me through some mutual relationships, and I saw some things that she was doing. I had just got involved with the whole domestic violence prevention and awareness and just being a man speaking up against it. I had just got involved with that last year, around this time, maybe a couple weeks before, because one of my acting friends was actually brutally murdered on her birthday and by an intimate partner. And I just said, you know what, enough is enough. And I decided just to step out there as a man in the forefront and say, look, I don't have an exact game plan or an itinerary or a cheat sheet or anything, but I know as a man's voice speaking up at a lot of these events, I figured that would be a good start. Go to a couple of vigils, go to some awareness meetings, and then I realized, okay, we don't just need awareness. Everybody knows what's going on, and that's the problem. People are just not speaking about it. It goes on in the homes and, in certain communities and societies and cultures, it's more things of things unsaid. You sweep it under the rug, what happens in this home stays right here in this home. And so I figured, well, I've been through some things as a man, as a little boy, actually. And I just figured, I've dealt with some things as other men that must have, too. And I realized that it takes us as men to be able to step up and own it, hold accountability, regardless of what side of it we're on, and get the help that we need and get the counseling. And then it starts with just admitting it and just being able to talk about it. So that's what led me, and I really enjoyed reading some of the excerpts and bullets from the Kate Chronicles that Delbra created. I thought that was a very good and clever concept in engaging people and giving them the analogies of using the whole concept of cake and not being crumbs and be the whole cake, but there's a big value there in someone changing, adapting that into their mindset. So I said, well, however I can lend my voice up in Rochester, hey, I'll come up to Rochester too. I spend a lot of my time in the South, either in Atlanta filming or right now in North Carolina and things like that. So I said, well, it's not a problem because I've gone all over the country in many states, lending my voice and gathering other men as well, especially acting friends, to lend their voice as well, just to stand in that gap, which led me to partially the project that we're filming right now. It's Exposé. Exposé is actually addressing the opioid crisis that we are facing now in our country. A lot of people are really hooked on these opioids, abusing it, and just the whole substance abuse of it itself And, you know, we just want to do something engaging. So like Teresa said earlier, which is edutainment, which is educating while entertaining, because entertaining is a form of social, implementing ideologies and some processes and solutions. So through entertainment is something, it's content that's going in our eyes, our ears, we're absorbing it, we're connecting with it. And the things that we connect with sometimes can be very influential in our lives. And so I figured, well, instead of me trying to go to push a reform bill, you know, or something like that, I'll just create the content and connect with people on that way.
And so Exposé will end up where? And I know it's a competitive world out there, but what are you hoping for, Julian?
You know what? Right about now, ever since Spectrum, which is formerly Time Warner, they just did a piece on us on Sunday. And it aired, and all of a sudden I'm getting a bunch of new calls regarding interest and just different organizations, groups, and social groups, and of course, the network interest. So it's the right time. So originally, you know, we were really prepared to just strictly go straight to Netflix in the spring. You know, there was nothing signed and sealed with that. That was just something that we were intending to do because that was on the table. But now there's so many different options and opportunities. I really just, my biggest thing is getting Exposé in front of the masses while still retaining creative control over the how it moves and how the story sure. flows. It doesn't change from season one to season two as far as the integrity of the content, you know, because there is some, you know, intimate partner issues that we will see in it, but that's based off of a lot of times the abuse of opioids, mm-hmm. you know, or reverse, like some people get on opioids because of domestic violence. So it's different things. So it's a double-edged sword there, and we really want to make sure that we find the right partnership that will help push all of the initiatives forward.
Julian, I want to ask you a question about intimate partner violence, and then I want to ask everyone in this room the same. So often we talk about how to help victims, resources for victims, not judging victims. I want to ask you if you think people who commit that kind of violence are reformable. I mean, obviously, I think the answer is yes, but I don't know how often. And I think we all might have different perspectives for different reasons on that. But I'll start with you, Julian, because as you say, you know, you went through a tragic loss. You're thinking about this issue. You're thinking about, okay, as a man, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to start by maybe going to some events and then speaking out where I can, looking for ways to actually act, not just talk, because enough of us know the issues now. And now it's time to make real change. But are you confident that the people who commit domestic partner violence, can they change? Can people be reformed?
I believe there is a high percentile, yes. Everyone, I'm not going to sit here and say that. But I do believe that there is a high percentile. I would say between 70-90% can, sure. Because at the end of the day, it's people. And people are, it's almost a natural thing. It's a lot of it is it's reactive behavior based on something that they felt was done to them. You know, whether if it's an experience that they personally experienced and they're having recall, or whether if it's, you know, they're in another emotional state and they just kind of strike out against those that are closest to them. It's all based off of emotion. And someone feeling neglected in some form or fashion, which brings forth that whole insecurity, which then causes, and it's a chain reaction, which then causes someone to go into defense mode. And when someone goes into defense mode, it's either fight or flight. And we see with the abusers, it's fight. They're not walking away from the situation. They're addressing and attacking the situation. So if we just tap into that person, allow that person to just really express themselves and just give them that platform. It's about creating the right platform because everybody doesn't speak on the same platform freely and openly. It's just creating different dynamic range of platforms that individuals can feel free to speak and start their process from that place. Some people will
recover sooner. Some may take some time, but I do think a good high percentile of individuals can experience that reform.
All right, Pamela Graham from the Willow Domestic Violence Center. What do we think about actual reforming abusers?
Well, so here's the thing that through the Duluth model, years ago, almost in Duluth, Minnesota, they had a very high rate of domestic violence homicides. And out of that, the power control wheel came out of that, and a lot of very real statistics came from that research. So basically what we learned from that is that we know that people who are abusive choose to do it. And we know they choose to do it because they weave in the love and the goodness along with the tension and the abuse. People who are abusive are beautiful, gorgeous people. They're not abusive to everybody. They are abusive to the one person they should be treating the best. Now, from the upstream piece of this is we also know people choose to be abusive, but they've learned it. And we've already talked about all the places that people can learn to do this. So if we start doing a couple of things here, so if we know that abusive people are beautiful and gorgeous people because they're not going to be abusive until there's a commitment. So that's already telling us that there's a strategy and a manipulation to it. To date, domestic violence isn't technically a law in the state of New York. It's not a crime. There's assault 1, 2, and 3. There's different levels of harassment. So if as a community, we recognize not only do we have a responsibility to heal from this, but we have the ability to do that also by already being the change. So the fact of looking to the future saying, well, domestic violence will go away tomorrow if we support people who are abusive, the fact is that we're not going to, domestic violence will not go away because there's such an, if we have equality and healthy, we're not going to have power and control. And we are not in a place that we are equal in this society today. So the power and control piece is always going to be there. So if we have the greater accountability, stronger laws to hold people who choose to be abusive accountable, then the consequences will be great enough to have an abusive person say, I'm not going to do this. Not only because it's not right, because I should be loving this person, not hurting, but the consequences will be great. If I strangle my intimate partner, it's a felony, right? So if the charges are greater, right? And then we will have more options for survivors then to be able to say, look, I don't want my intimate partner to be hurt here, but I got to do something to have it stop. We spend more time on asking why survivors are staying rather than why isn't the abusive person just stopping it?
Yeah. Is there, it's one thing to strengthen laws as a deterrent. Is there any sort of reliable therapy model that could help?
Not to date. Not to date. But there are better intervention programs around the United States. But the research and the best practice of that and the outcomes are not solid enough to really know whether or not those are effective.
Oh, boy.
Can I speak to
Absolutely,
this issue?
Absolutely, sure.
So as a life and relationship coach, this is at the heart of the passion of what I do. So I have had clients who have been in shelters. Her and her daughter, her and her child, they were in a shelter. You're right, the partner, when she got in my program, both of them said, he was like, she'll be back because this isn't gonna work. They both said, we'll be back. And we both laughed at him because it was a joke. That's what happens a lot of times for some people. You have to understand their culture.
You have to be able
to relate to their mindset. You have to be able to relate to how they communicate. And so sometimes there is a huge trust factor just in them being able to open up and allow you to be able to reach them. So with this particular client, within 30 days, she snapped. And how she snapped was because she understood, I have given away too much power and control over my life. Mm-hmm. And she went on a path to change within 2 months. She totally turned it around and she left. Now, I'm not saying she's gone and she stayed gone. But what I said to both of them is, you will be healthy together or apart, but you will be healthy. This is about changing mindsets and changing homes. When she found the empowerment and building of her self-esteem, she was able to now receive the message, we need to start cooking. We're going to go to the grocery store. We're not going to eat fast food. Her finances improved because she started to love herself. She could love on her children with a clearer vision. It starts there, but it takes time. So the reactive, I have a brother that, I'll be honest with you, has been in jail. So the laws throwing you in jail and the fines, when we already know financially they can't afford it, it's just not a model. Something has to change. Something has to be allowed to try. And so for me, this is just a vision. You know, it's like planting a seed. I may not be the one to water it or nurture the soil, but I'm going to plant a seed. And so it's about changing mindsets. For me, that's the only model that can work, because it's going to take years in order for us to evolve.
Well, before I let Aceon and Teresa jump in too, one of our listeners on the subject of can men change is Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, Evan. I've been reading Lundy Bancroft.
Oh, wonderful guy.
He's wonderful. And yes. I'd recommend it to anybody. Why does he do that? Anyway, yes. I want to say, first of all, it's the woman that changes. It's because she admits that she may have some things that she can work on and do differently. In my opinion, men do not change. First of all, because they don't think it's their fault. They think it's her fault. They are blamers. They're also victims of her. They have a way of turning it around. And they have been socialized in male superiority, entitlement, control, and power. And they use that to the end of certain goals, like getting what they want. And so they have something to gain by not changing and by not admitting that they are the problem. And that is the thing that he says that he has the most trouble with, is that they come in with these ideas that they simply will not give up. And if he starts with a group of people, of men, say 20 in a group, working with them, and seriously, he's very confronted with them, maybe, I'm going to guess, I can't remember exactly, maybe 10 will stay the course for a year of therapy. And of those, maybe one, in his opinion, will change. And then what was so discouraging to him is that later on, checking back, that one person had gotten into another relationship and was abusive. So it doesn't look good, because, after all, why do they matter in the first place? It is to have control, which they feel entitled to.
Exactly.
So reading this book, he puts it so well, and he has so much evidence and studies and so forth. But I think, as a woman who's been battered, I realize that I'm not doing something right. Although anybody he would have been involved with, oh, he would have been a problem for. But that I had to make some serious changes in the way I looked at things, whereas, as far as I know to this day, he has not changed one bit, because, in his opinion, he's a fine fellow. But anyway, based on what I've read, they do not change. Thank you very much, Evan.
Jane, thank you. Do we have the smartest listeners or what? I mean, I think I read a lot. And then I meet
people
Lindy
like, Bancroft is major. In fact, he kind of thinks 2%. 2% of abusers,
wow.
Really kind of. And it comes down to, you know, it really comes down to making the choice.
I think and I totally agree with what she shared, because even in my client's story, he changed, and then he tried to go right back.
It's the right to have the right and the privilege
exactly.
to have the power and control.
And I said to her, why are you going backwards? And so they need a support system that reminds them. So education, it starts there, but there has to be a support system. But what I will say is, men in this community that I interviewed said, it starts with women. It starts with us empowering ourselves. When we change, we will cause a change reaction to get them to change. Because when they seek out other women that have low self-esteem, then they can abuse that next person. So they're going to go from person to person. But when we become united in understanding the power is within us, then they stop seeing the same like-minded. And so now they have to shift.
Based on the safety planning of this situation, again, with the individual danger levels of each situation, for one person in this situation, it might be successful. For another one, it might get them murdered.
Mm. Absolutely.
So it's that gaining and maintaining the power and control thing that is, that they're managing their own system, safety in that.
I think it's also important to look at domestic violence as a health issue.
Absolutely.
And how we can start to be healthier people, even from the start. When we look at populations that do not plan for pregnancy and often have babies that are underweight, so you're fighting from the start, okay? So you're already behind the eight ball. You're not strong. You're picked on in school. You grow up in a certain setting. And so I think that there's a lot of things that happen in this very community that lends itself to engaging in behaviors that's not healthy, like substance abuse, the opioids, alcohol in my situation played a lot into the intimate partner violence. But when we as a people can start to focus on being healthier all around, physically, mentally, financially, the community strengths, that is when we really start to make a dent into intimate partner violence. It's not something that you address when the person is punching you in the face. It's something that you taught that little boy or that little girl on how you deal with disputes. When we talk about settling those things, when you're having, that is the teaching, that is the education, that is the opportunity to make the real difference when you're looking on this end at me and saying, oh, why did she go back? What was my level of coping? How did I deal with disputes as a child? That's how we're going to make a difference in the ills of our society, is when we train up our children, when we prepare to have babies, and we create healthier environments.
You know, what's really wonderful is it's Willow's vision, the Willow Domestic Violence Center's vision in the future, that we live in a community that domestic violence no longer exists and where healthy relationships thrive. And the chances of domestic violence going away in our lifetime probably are slim. But the message we can send right now is that each and every one of us has the personal right to a healthy relationship, regardless of the message, regardless of incarceration, regardless of drugs or alcohol, regardless of any. We each have a right to be safe and have a healthy relationship. And that's beautiful by you, because that's true.
Well, AC, and I know you want to jump in here. And as I turn to you for your thoughts on this issue, I'll just read Dr. Elizabeth Murray, listening on Twitter, says, responding to the 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men are victims of physical violence by an intimate partner. She says, and in many of those cases, a child is watching, learning, questioning, hurting.
Which falls exactly to what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Back to what I was saying as far as breaking the chain, there are many children who see domestic violence taking place. To be completely honest, I have been verbally abusive, and I have been the verbal abuser, you know? And there are certain things that leads to domestic violence as well, you know? And I'm not going to say that I was the best in my relationship, but also I wasn't the worst. I learned. And men can change. I understand what she was saying, the previous caller, I understand what she was saying.
Sure.
And I respect it, but you have to look at the concept that the man was the one who wrote the book. Men can change. It's not always on one side.
Well, even if it's 1 or 2%, the point is, if it's 1 or 2%, change. It's not zero, and it can be a lot more.
And that's
it
only for the men that are abusive. But not all men are abusive
at all.
No, I understand.
I understand, you know, completely. Yeah, I was raised by queens, I know. They taught me how to be a king.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, I learned from that. And it falls back to what Teresa was saying. When you have your kids there, they need to learn. Because if they see daddy and mommy act in a certain way, they're going to think it's okay to do that.
It's upstream.
You know, it has to, you have to break that chain early so they can be able to carry themselves as such.
Well, do you hear the wonderful comments from ACN? You're going to be shocked when you see him on stage in September. A different guy on stage.
Precious ACN, man. He's a ACN,
I know. Well, ACN Owens plays the abuser in the Collard Green Curves, the Nurse Bowick story. You can get tickets now. The first night sold out September 14th, but tickets still available for September 15th and 16th at Jiva Theater Centers. Somebody's saying get tickets. Fielding Stage, that's part of the Fringe Festival. And I just want to thank our panel. Jim in Pittsburgh, I'm sorry, we just got all tied up there at the end there. So let me just say thanks to ACN. We'll see you on stage.
Yes.
I appreciate it. Our thanks to, as well, to Delbra Brown, who's a local advocate for intimate partner violence prevention. And your book is?
If I can't be the cake, I won't be the crumb. And it can be found on Amazon.
You can find it. Thank you for being here much. Pamela Graham comes to us from the Willow Domestic Violence Center. Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you. 585-222-SAFE. That's our hotline.
222-SAFE. And Teresa Bowick sharing her story much more so than I think I even realized. I admire you even more than I thought I did.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. It's great to see you. As always, our thanks as well. On the line with us is Julian Brentano, the executive producer and writer of Exposé, which he's hoping to show the world in 2018, and continuing his work on making sure men, women, every one of us is supporting each other and ending domestic violence. Thank you so much, Julian, for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate everybody. I think it's wonderful what you're doing, allowing everybody on this platform, and I just want to see more of it.
All right. Very good. Our thanks to all the guests. There you go. Have a great afternoon, Julian, and thank you, everyone in studio, for being here. We'll get a short break and much more Connections coming up.